Hello from Complex to Queens listeners. This is Ken Lavin. I'm joined by Lucas Blahos, and unfortunately Steve Sippa is out of town, so it'll just be the two of us. How you doing this week, Lucas?
I'm all right. It'd be nice if my building would turn on the air conditioning, you know, but other than that, all good.
Yeah, it's entirely too deep into the year for the heat to still be on in your apartment.
Apparently it's going to go down like 30 degrees. Hey, northeast spring. You never know what's going to happen.
Climate change.
Yeah, it's delightful.
So the Mets are generally terrible. There's
oh no, who could have seen that coming?
Most people. Most people with eyes and ears. And there's been a lot of talk about the current Mets manager, Mickey Callaway, soon becoming a former Mets manager. So for this week's promote, trade, extend, we're going to go with these three former Mets managers. So, Lucas.
Yep.
Which of the following would you promote, trade, and extend out of Willie Randolph, Terry Collins, and Jerry Manuel? I'd like to begin by saying there is no good option here.
Yeah. I'm also a little hurt by the fact that understanding how to critique Willie was a bit before my time. I wasn't so I don't remember the whatever bad things Willie did. And then for Jerry, I just remember he always had bad teams. So I can't, like, I'm sure he did dumb things as well. Like wasn't he influential in like getting Mejia on the roster that year for no reason?
Probably. Jerry Manuel was also just weird and sketchy.
Yeah, like, he was a weird
dude. He was the gangsta guy who said, if I forget what the exact quote was, but it was something to the something like, they're all acting too gangsta out here, and you know, if they keep doing it, I'm gonna cut somebody.
What? I have no memory.
Yeah, here, wait. Let me pull up the memes page on AmazingAvenue.com.
Oh, that's
so. Do you wanna continue with the other?
Yeah. The point I was getting to is that the one manager here that I have plenty of experience with is, of course, Terry.
Oh yeah.
And I would fire, not Terry the person, but Terry the manager into the sun at the earliest available opportunity. So
you are saying that you will trade Terry Collins?
Yes. Yes. To literally anyone for literally anything. Jerry.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, I found the gangsta quote.
Go ahead.
All right, so from the Amazing Avenue's meme guide, in June 2009, in Jerry Manuel's introductory press conference as Mets manager, so keep in mind this is, like, literally right after he chose the job, after he was awarded the job, he claimed that the Mets were gangsters on the field. End quote.
Days later,
when he was asked what he discussed with Jose Reyes, who threw an angry fit after being pulled from a game as an injury precaution, Manuel said, "I told him the next time he does that, I'm going to get my blade out and cut him." Right on the field. Right on the field. Hey, I'm a gangsta now. You go gangsta on me, I'm gonna have to get you now. Perhaps what Manuel is best known for off the field, gangsta has come to symbolize something that is stupid in an ironically Mets way.
Didn't he get a job after the Mets, too?
I highly doubt it.
I could have sworn he did.
His career, let's find out. He might have been a bench coach or something.
I thought he was like a bench coach for like the White Sox or something like that.
That makes sense because you know who their manager was at the time.
Robbie Ventura, right?
Ozzie Guillen, who was another.
Oh, right. Before
Loose Cannon. Diaz coach.
No, it doesn't look like he got.
Oh, not at that time. I could have sworn that was true.
No, he was with the White Sox, but that's, I thought no, the White Sox.
Mets, were, yeah, the Mets, and he might have been like a random coach, and Wikipedia's just not functioning for me. But
now he's the director of baseball operations at William Jessup University.
That's good.
Buddy. just for the hilarity of that quote, I'm going to extend him, because, like, the Mets were bad in 2009, and it wasn't Jerry Manuel's fault, so, like, that was probably some good entertainment value. And then I'll – did I say extend Jerry? I think I just did say extend Jerry. And then I'll promote Willie. I mean, the tough part here is that, like, managers don't matter that much.
Yeah.
And all swine up screaming about them.
So, like, in-game strategy is like, a big part of, you know, the fan experience, you know? Second-guessing the manager, you know, how to win games, like, physically. So, like, unlike you, I don't really remember super granularly Willie Randolph's foibles. I just remember the 2007 season and hope to never relive that.
Please, no.
I'm not going to – yeah, so I'm going to trade Jerry Manuel because that quote is ridiculous. And, like, if memory serves, that was not his only incident. I think the blog Fire Joe Morgan by Ken Tremendous.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
He did a whole piece on Manuel's decision-making and all the things he said about clutch. So Manuel is going to get the boot.
Over Terry?
I hate Terry, as you know. I at one point wrote a blog detailing all of his, like, mistakes day to day. So I think I'm going to extend Willie and promote Terry just as, like, a placeholder, you know?
Yikes.
There's no good option here.
It's bad.
The Mets have never had a good manager since, like, I don't know, Davey Johnson.
Was Davey Johnson even a good manager?
No, he might have just had a great team. Gil Hodges, maybe?
Yeah. I mean, it's always easy to criticize managers as long as you don't pull a Wally and, like, actually endanger your players.
Yeah.
Like, there is a line somewhere, and I'll give the Mets at least, like, a modicum of credit. They never dipped into that well, despite seemingly always being on the precipice of doing it, but... Can we get a manager that has, like, two brain cells to rub together or something?
Somebody who, like, knows how to double switch before they give him the job. Like, that would be cool.
Well, now Mickey only double switches. He thinks he can only double switch. Insert two-button meme where one option is double switch and the other option is also double switch.
I look forward to the Rim Jiggleman era. That's going to be fun.
Shortly thereafter, we'll have the Ventura era, who was also awful in Chicago. That'll be great.
You know who Van Wagenen's, like, I don't know if they were roommates, but they were best friends when he was at Stanford.
Uh-oh.
No, this would actually be a very good hire, but there's no way he comes aboard.
Is he, like, currently a manager? Or?
Yeah, it's AJ Hinch.
Of course, like, that would never happen.
It's never going to happen, but, you know, they're, like, best friends.
I was afraid you were going to say, like, Brad Ausmus or something like that.
That's who they might hire. All right, so back to minor league baseball.
Oh, Lord. Speaking of, is Terry still around? Is he still, like, the minor league director, whatever he was?
As far as I know, he's just, like, one of those advisors who shows up places.
Okay.
I can't remember if he was one of the random people I saw walking around the complex when I visited this summer, or this past March. But that's very much the role that he has. It's, like, going around to the different affiliates, like a roving instructor advisor type thing, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I could be completely wrong, but, you know.
I know he had that job at some point. I just don't know if
he's... Yeah, he's definitely still in the front office because, you know, Fred likes to talk to him, so. As Mike Puma was very fond of detailing that Fred doesn't have that relationship with Mickey.
Gee, I wonder why that is.
Yeah.
And I wonder who could be leaking that his job is in danger.
So the Syracuse Mets went 3-3 this week. Mm-hmm. They're 24-18 overall. First place in the International League North Division, 1.5 games up on the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs. So good for you, Syracuse, and your aging roster of, you know, former big leaguers. The Rumble Ponies went 4-3 this week. They are now 23-15 overall. Good for first place in the Eastern League Eastern Division, and they are a half game up on the Trenton Thunder. So take that, Yankees. Also, they split a four-game series with Trenton 2-2 this week, so that didn't really have an effect.
No.
But it's good to, you know, they were in town. Steve will probably have a lot of thoughts on the guys next week. The St. Lucie Mets went 4-3 this week. They are now 22-19 overall, which puts them in fourth place in the Florida State League Southern Division. They're 5 games back of the Palm Beach Cardinals. And then the Columbia Fireflies are went 4-3, not including today's game, which, let me see. They did hold on and win, so good job, guys.
Nice.
They had a lead in the 9th. They gave up the lead. They got the lead back, it looks like, in the 10th, and were able to hold it. So good job, Fireflies. I'm not adjusting my notes. So all of this is not including Sunday night's game. They're now 15-27, or I guess 16-28, which is still probably last place in the South Atlantic League Southern Division. They're 8 games out of first and probably looking forward to the second half of the season to potentially get a playoff spot.
Yeah, and hopefully some of the younger guys can start picking it up a little bit.
I think Vientos has hit 2 home runs this week. That's good news, right?
Yeah, and they had the one doubleheader I covered this week on the Farm Report, they had all of them did nothing. Like, all the notable guys did nothing, and Brian Sharp had, the day of his life. So it's good to hear that Vientos is starting to hit, though.
Yeah, because that, again, that lineup is, bleak without him.
It should be so good, and it's so not. Oh, wait, we have to do our weekly check on Newton's strikeout rate. Shervian, which I could never spell.
I always forget the E.
I don't even know how to pronounce it. Shervian, I guess?
I've heard Shervin. I've heard Shervian. I've heard, I don't know.
All right, so he's holding steady now in the mid-30s with a robust weighted runs created of 9.
Yeah, it's rough. He's having a lot of trouble putting the bat on the ball.
Yep.
Still walking, almost 10%.
He's also not
hitting for anything.
Right.
His line right now is 115, 198, 141.
This suggests to me that this is, really a recognition problem. It's not that he's just swinging hard all the time like some guys. Yeah. It's that he can't pick anything up right now.
Yeah.
Because even when he's making contact, it's weak.
Yeah, I'm going to say if he doesn't turn it around quickly, he's probably slated for a demotion to Brooklyn once short season starts up.
Yeah, which he's 20. It's fine.
He's 20. He's going to be more raw than most 20-year-olds will be, given his background, from the actual Netherlands and then to, I think, Curaçao.
Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong about that, but yeah, he's going to be raw. And like Jeff always says, he's, a project, a little bit of a project. Was probably going to struggle, but
I'm not hitting the panic button yet.
Yeah. I was hoping it wouldn't quite look like this, but whatever. He's still young.
Right.
He's an athletic freak. So.
We've gotten some good reports on him and then also some bad reports, so.
Yeah. A little bit of everything.
Yeah. Mauricio, we only hear good things.
Yeah. Again, it's like he's putting up, let's see. I want to see what Andres Jimenez hit when he was in the Sally.
Are we going to talk about what Jeff saw at the game on Saturday?
I'm thinking we should wait for Steve.
Fair.
That might be a good idea.
Oh, right. He was there, too,
He
right?
was there, and we probably have a lot more week. Thoughts.
Spoiler alert,
do you
want to
tease it? Yeah,
yeah,
not great.
It's not the best. It's not the best. Come back to next. Tune in next week for more details on why the Mets are bad.
Oh, Jesus. Basically, Jimenez hit as a 18-year-old in single A in 2017, 265, 346, 349, which was a 107 WRC+. Mauricio at about the same age is hitting 283, 335, 355, good for a 103 WRC+. So around the same, the difference being that I don't think Mauricio is as good a defender as Jimenez.
Yeah.
So he's going to have to hit a little more, but
I think that the upside is there more.
Oh yeah. And there's, he's so young and the lower half is thicker than the upper half. So I'd imagine he'll fill out at some point. Maybe he'll start hitting for power. So, yep. That's the state of the system from a win-loss perspective. Lucas, do you want to introduce our players of the week now?
Yeah, so you guys are going to get really sick of us talking about some guys at this point, right? So we'll start with the one we haven't talked about yet, and that's the hitter of the week, who was Patrick Mazeika. Mazeika? Mazeika? Whatever.
Sure.
So he's a catcher. He was an eighth-round pick out of Stetson, which is also Jacob deGrom's school. Mazeika was in 2015. This week he had 8 hits and 23 at-bats, 4 homers, 7 extra base hits, 348, 375, 1,000 line. That's his slugging, not his OPS. Good for a 292 weighted, which is, of course, absurd. So, like I said, he was an 8th-round pick out of Stetson in 2015. His first year as a professional, he hit pretty well for the Kingsport Mets, or very well for the Kingsport Mets, but that's a level that he should have dominated coming out of college. And then moved up to the Fireflies in 2016 and continued to hit well, 305, 414, 402. And that was pretty indicative of where he was as a hitter, just good. Like, he'll hit for a decent average, has a good approach, but not a ton of power. While his defense was pretty, I guess, fringy is the right word for his catcher defense. He moved up to St. Lucie in 2017. Same basic line. You'd like knock 10 points off the on-base percentage and the average, and it's basically the same. Then finally ran into a wall when he got to Double A, as many hitters do. So at Double A, he struggled to a 231, 328, 363 line in 2017. So he is as you would expect, he has a nice smooth swing. Hasn't had a lot of plane in the past, which has led to the lack of top tier power, or really much power to speak of at all. When he actually gets into the ball, he has good bat speed, so he hits it hard, and he does leverage his lower half. He just needed to adjust his swing plane a little bit. And that's something that seems to have happened over the last couple seasons. It seems like the Mets have been able to tweak that a little bit from the in-person reports we have. And perhaps this week is a good sign of things to come going forward. On the defensive side, there's still some work to do. Like, he has quick exchanges and he's got a good pop time, but ultimately that's not the most important part of catcher defense, despite how much we like to yell about the Mets not controlling the run game.
You can get the ball out super quick, and if you're, you know, only throwing like 70 mile an hour lollipops, you know.
Right. It doesn't much matter, right? He's got a weak arm.
Yeah.
He's also not the best receiver from what I understand and from the brief looks I've had at him. So you have a profile where to date, it's been fringy power for like a corner infielder and fringy defense for a catcher. So not a great combination. He's a little bit older at this point. He's 25. There's a potential utility bat here, a potential backup catcher bat here, a bat first backup catcher. If the power spike is real, it might be more than that, but I wouldn't hold my breath at this point.
If the power spike ends up being real, you know, maybe he even ends up like what they wanted to do with Darnold forever, but never actually did, where they work him out at like first a few days.
I think you mean work him out at second base, third base, second base, third base, second base, third base.
Yeah. Just hope the ball doesn't get hit to him. But yeah, he'd have a lot to do to get to that point.
Right. And even talking about the power spike, like we're saying there's a spike, but his ISO is still only 208, which is higher than he's ever posted before. But those 4 home runs he hit this week,
yeah, that's probably
5 on the season, right? Yep. As a 25-year-old repeating Double A.
Yep.
So, and there are definitely, I think there are, we could have a long discussion about optimal roster construction and like when you'd want a bat first backup catcher, when you'd want a glove first backup catcher. So, and I'm sure different organizations will have different philosophies. And look, man, catchers are weird. Sometimes the offense just takes a while because you have to do so much other stuff.
Right.
You never really know when some random catcher at 27 is going to make the majors and then just exist there for like 10 years.
Oh, yeah. A lot of it just doesn't make any sense. It's just like who's in the organization and how badly are they unable to like replace him with somebody better.
Right. So,
yeah.
He's a useful piece to have around.
Yeah.
It's something that you want to have around and not have to trade for when two of your catchers get hurt or something, but.
Like I always say, like, catchers catch forever. So
yeah,
if he can stay behind the plate, he's going to have a long career. And, you know, the longer you're around, you know, the more likely it is that somebody will need a catcher, you know, on a big league roster for a few days.
Yep.
So, good luck, Pat.
Wilson Wamos is still catching somehow, so.
Yeah, it's wild.
In quotes, catching.
He, I've seen him drop a lot of balls, Lucas.
Yeah, I think everyone has. It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad.
Yeah.
All right, so that's the one we haven't talked about. And now I think for the third week in a row or the third week in the last four, we're going to have a lengthy discussion about Anthony Kay, who is the pitcher of the week. He had one start, 7 innings, 8 strikeouts, a walk, 3 hits. It was a complete game because it doubleheader, so 7 innings. His line on the season is now pretty nuts. He's got a 1.24 ERA, a 3.13 FIP, and that's in 43 innings, so the sample size is just real. He's striking out more than a batter per inning. The walks aren't insane. They're not pristine, but he's only walking 3 guys per 9, a little bit more than that. And as we talked about last week, like, he is, I think at this point, clearly demonstrated he's too good for big attempts in the Eastern League, right? I can never remember these things.
Yeah,
but he's too good for Double A, right? And with the Mets are starting Drew Gagnon tomorrow against the Nationals, which
Gagnon's been like decent, but like that's definitely not how they drew it up in spring.
No, and it's indicative.
And if they did.
No, in the spring they drew it up as having Jason Vargas start against the Nationals.
30.
Wait, that's worse. So, but the point is that the Mets starter depth is not non-existent, but not great.
Yeah.
Despite that, we got news or a couple tweets this week that the Mets have no immediate plans to promote K. The dude's blowing people – I won't say blowing people away. That's not the right word. But he's clearly too good for the league he's in right now. He fills
– Not even just that. He's also like – he's
old.
He's right at the league average, which, you know, isn't terribly important for pitchers. But, like, it's not like you'd be sending him to AAA where he's, like, 7 years younger than everyone.
Right.
He's, like – league average age.
This is also a polished college arm that you want to move quickly before he got hurt.
Yeah,
like in an ideal world where K's elbow isn't borked when he's drafted, he's in AAA, what, a year and a half ago?
Yeah, you could make that case, yeah. He'd probably start in Brooklyn that year. The next year, they'd probably move him through both. But hopefully, if he pitched well, he would hopefully get to Double A would be the goal, and then once you're in Double A, you're a step away, you know?
Right.
That's basically what they did. They did A-ball, both A-balls last year, but they, for some reason, kept him there all year. They should probably really be looking to move him up to Triple A.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason for him to still be there.
I even understood the 2 A-ball levels last year, because it was coming back from the injury, and he wasn't,
and the command was a little,
so it was like, okay.
Like, really, he's got a curveball that's too good for the league. That's what it is. Like,
I think we talked about this last time as well, where, like, there is a benefit.
Yeah.
I mean, the flip side of that is that you don't want to play against competition that's so much worse than you that you gain nothing. Right? If you've got a curveball that no one in the league can hit, you're just going to spam that curveball. You have no impetus to work on your command. You have no impetus to work on your other pitches. You have no impetus to improve the curveball.
Exactly.
Because you have no point of reference to know that, I can improve these things, because you're just destroying people.
Yep. So hopefully they call him up soon to AAA. Would you consider – I'm going to put you on the spot with this, but would you consider going straight to the big leagues with him, or do you think – facing sort of guys with big league service time in AAA first is an important step developmentally?
That's a good question, actually. I think for I'm coming up with this answer on the spot just for my own internal logic because I haven't thought about this extensively. My instinct is that it's more important. All right, I'm going to backtrack here. AAA is filled with what we refer to as like the quad A guys who see major league time. I feel like the hitters at AAA are typically, even if they're quad A type hitters, aren't as major league caliber as the pitchers at AAA. Because you have relievers who are getting cycled or sixth starters whatever else, right? They're more critical to a team than the sixth outfielder or the random utility infielder.
It's you're less likely to see more guys who are like, you know, guys either on the back half of their career trying to make a roster again, or, you know, guys who are still looking for their, you know, extended professionals who are still looking for their first shot at the big leagues.
Right. So, and I think if you're, to use the Mets as an example, if you're a hitter, I think it's more important for you to learn how to hit against Eric Hanhold and Ty Bachelor or Corey Oswalt than it is as a pitcher to learn how to get Rajay Davis out.
Yeah.
So that's a long way of saying I would not be totally opposed to jumping him to the majors.
Mm-hmm.
But they won't even promote him to AAA, so.
Yeah, right. So I probably think I think they should probably send him to AAA, but I don't think it's that big a deal either way.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, like it's not like you'd be facing better hitters than he currently is. I'd like to put him in a position where he's not really, like you always say, with, you know, you want to face people who are better than you, but not so much better than you that you know, get shellacked.
Right.
I think that's the risk, him only having thrown like a month.
Mm-hmm.
Above, you know, A-ball.
Right.
But, you know, really they need to get him going.
Right. I think the point is that in an ideal world, he gets time at AAA. So start getting him that time before you need him at the major league level. Let me ask you this. Would your answer change if they were still in Vegas?
Yeah, probably. I think Vegas is a miserable place to be.
Especially for a pitcher. Like,
yeah. And, like, at that point, you're talking about, you know, he could get shellacked in the big leagues, but he's probably going to get shellacked in Vegas because Vegas is Vegas, you know?
Right.
But being in the International League and, you know, he could get used to the juice balls and stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's another really good point. Now that AAA has the Major League ball and the Major League ball is so different, maybe it is really important to get AAA time.
That being said, they should do it now so that they have the option in a month.
Right, of course.
All right, any other thoughts on Anthony Kay?
we've already talked about – somehow, no matter how we talk about Anthony Kay, there's always some controversy.
Some twinge of negativity.
Yeah, either we don't like
there's
him
no
or now –
his own. Like,
yeah. It's about the Mets, Anthony, please. It's not you. It's the
team. We like you, Anthony. You're a good dude. All right. Okay, so I guess we'll take a break now, and we'll be back in a couple minutes to do some discussion on guys we like in the upcoming draft in June. All right.
Hey, everybody. I'm Neil I. Patel, editor-in-chief of The Verge, and this is The Vergecast. Vergecast is the flagship podcast of The Verge. Every week, we cover the latest in tech news and reviews. We take a critical look at what is going on now and next in the world of tech. The show is hosted by me, our executive editor, Dieter Bohn.
Not your friend.
And Paul Miller.
It just feels like there's something wrong with all computers, though. Don't you think that sometimes?
We do that on Fridays. And on Tuesdays, we have an interview episode. I've been talking to all kinds of influential people in and around the world of tech. We talked to Microsoft founder Bill Gates about his philanthropic efforts.
You can design systems without having to reveal any individuals particular medical record.
Journalists and academics like Lena Khan, who thinks that we should be doing way more to break up giant companies like Amazon and Facebook.
I think in hindsight, allowing Facebook to buy up both WhatsApp and Instagram proved to have been the wrong call.
And we talked to tech CEOs like Vizio's Bill Baxter, who explained exactly how smart TV manufacturers make their money.
It's about post-purchase monetization of the TV.
It's ads. Check us out every Friday to hear about everything in tech, from new iPhone leaks to breaking down Facebook's ongoing issues of privacy to just me and Paul ranting at each other about the role of the government. And check us out on Tuesdays when I host the interview episode. Subscribe to The Vergecast wherever podcasts are served. We'll see you then.
Beyonce, Ariana Grande, and Drake are talked about ad nauseum as celebrities, but there's one thing that's rarely discussed: their music.
On Switched on Pop, we go deep into the sounds of pop music to explain what it means, how it's made, and why it's so effective.
We talk with some of today's greatest artists, producers, and journalists to decode the musical logic behind our modern soundtrack and understand its role in our culture.
Switched on Pop will reveal for you how a secretive Swedish producer is behind many of the top 10 hits of the past 20 years.
And we'll uncover the ways that songwriters embed their political activism into today's most popular tracks.
We'll show you the surprising musical similarities between Cardi B and Taylor Swift.
And we'll even dive into the classical past to hear how the Jonas Brothers mirror Mozart's youthful party days.
I'm songwriter Charlie Harding.
And I'm musicologist Nate Sloan.
Join us on a journey through the world of popular music by subscribing to Switched on Pop on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app to get new episodes every Tuesday.
And we're back. This is from Complex to Queens. I'm Kenny. I'm here with Lucas Vlahos. And we're going to talk about the draft a little bit more since it's now, what, about a month away, Lucas?
3 weeks? 3.5 weeks? Whatever, a month. Let's go with a month.
Yeah, sure. You know, that makes me feel better about being where I am in my research.
It is Monday, June 3rd. It is like 2 weeks away. Yikes.
I have a lot of prep dudes to read about.
Uh-huh. It's a month away.
Hey, great. Okay, so last week we chose our guys, the guys we like with the Mets pick at number 12. This week we're going to be talking about the guys we like most out of the field. Basically, there's always a chance that guys fall for whatever bad reason, you know. Who would you pick if you could take anybody?
Right.
So, do you want to start, Lucas?
Yeah, sure. So my guy, to the surprise of no one who has talked to me at any point over the last, 2.5 years, is Andrew Vaughn. He's a first baseman from California, Cal Berkeley. He was born in Santa Rosa, which is, a half hour away from Berkeley in the Bay Area, roughly.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't tell you.
Which direction, but
no,
it's close.
It's around there, right? Wasn't drafted out of high school, probably because he's a short right-handed. Apparently played shortstop in high school, but every dude plays shortstop in high school. So point is, wasn't drafted. Went to Cal and just started mashing the can we curse? We can curse on here, right?
I'm going to go ahead and say yeah.
Yeah, he just started mashing the ever-living shit out of the ball immediately, right? So as a freshman, he had a 969 OPS, he had 12 home runs and 218 at-bats, 19 walks and 24 strikeouts. And that was – so actually that year I had been doing some of the radio broadcasts for Cal because I was a student at the time. And me being the – I saw him and I was super impressed. I'm like, this guy looks great, but I don't know anything, right? I'm not a real scout. I'm probably just – I haven't seen enough guys, but the one play I always go back to is in the second half of that season, he looked a little out of sync. Maybe he was tired, whatever. And his bottom half was just totally not working. And despite that, he got a ball that was not a meatball, but it was at away over the outer part of the plate with his second half completely decoupled. He hits it out to right center over the bleachers in the next stadium over into the wind on a cold night in Cal, which is not the easiest thing to do. It was
dude can mash.
Yeah, right. And then it just got better from there. In 2018, he hit .402, .531, .819, 23 homers. 44 walks and only 18 strikeouts, and that was in 199 at-bats. He won the Golden Spike Award, which is the baseball equivalent of the Heisman, as a sophomore, which isn't common. Underclassmen I couldn't tell you the frequency, but it's rare for underclassmen to win. And he's followed that up with another strong season this year. Not quite as insane.
I mean, he's never going to, slug 800 again.
This year he's only 725.
Yeah.
So,
he actually might.
He's hitting .377, .531, .725, 15 homers. The strikeouts are up. So it's 51 walks and 30 strikeouts and 167 at bats. I suspect that's more just getting pitched around and getting a little, having some youthful impatience because Because why would you pitch to Andrew Vaughn in the Cal lineup ever, right?
I think that's a very common thing in college ball. Like,
right.
Guys who are like the only real like top three round draft pick, mm-hmm. potential draft pick on their team, and like pitchers don't want to face them.
Right. And then I think as a hitter, it's very easy, especially if you feel like you have to like put the team on your back on some level. So that's what I'd guess the strikeouts are
probably
due to. Like, he's still walking.
It's still not like egregious at all. It's like 13%.
No. And I think the entire dip in his slash on is explained by that factor. But whatever. This is all with metal bats. If you only like wood bat stats, at the Cape Cod League, he had 308, 368 with 654 with 5 homers and 52 at bats. So the dude can mash. Right?
Is that good?
I think that's good. Right? Like, did Alonso ever go to the Cape?
Oh, let's find out.
That'd be a good point of reference, right? So the obvious problem here is that he's a right first baseman. He's generously listed at 5'11". He's 214 pounds. Like, so he's not Prince Fielder, right? But he's not super athletic either. He plays a good first base. I thought, like, he's got good hands. He pitched sometimes, so he has a really good arm. Some scouting sites I've read have suggested he could hack it at third base, which I am A, not qualified to assess, and B, somewhat skeptical of, though in the age of infield positioning, where positioning is so important, I could buy it.
Pete Alonso's Cape Cod numbers. So he played for the Bourne Braves.
Okay.
And hit in 98 at bats, 255, 321. 286.
Yeah. So Vaughn just blows him out of the water there, right?
Yeah. Although, to be fair, Pete, you know, was a different trajectory there.
Absolutely.
You know.
Pete developed a lot once he was a Met.
Yeah.
The few
super, like, good success stories of developing a hitting prospect that needed considerable work.
Right. We'll talk about that more or less next week, I think, when we talk about the Menace. So, point is, Vaughn can really hit, but the defensive profile is questionable. I've seen some places suggest he could play the outfield. The dude's a 30 runner. I don't think that works so well.
So, if he's a 30 runner, he's probably as fast as, what, JD Davis, maybe?
Yeah.
Basically, it's going to come down to how good do his routes get, and
that's fair.
You know, he probably could do it if, you know, but it's going to take, like, intangible skills mm-hmm. and other things, you know?
I'd have more because I trust...
I think he's going to hit enough to play first base on pretty much any team.
Right. And if you're going to put him somewhere else, I think I have more faith in the arm, given that he was a pitcher, the arm playing at third base than I would putting him in left field with the lack of speed. But again, I'm not super qualified to judge that.
Yeah. Well, lots of weird things happen on defense anyway.
Right.
Between amateur ball and the pros.
And the Mets are certainly not a great team at developing that aspect of things either, unfortunately. The actual original question I asked Steve when I said we should do this kind of segment is that we should look at our favorite guy who the Mets might have a chance at. And that just turned into doing our favorite guy. As of a couple of weeks ago, the Mets had a 0% chance at Vaughn. Like, he was mm-hmm. going to go – he might have gone first, but probably not. The Royals were going to be the Royals and not take him because they're the Royals. But he was at worst going to go third. In some more recent mocks, it looks like the White Sox might also be going towards a prep hitter instead. The Marlins are apparently attached to some outfielder from Vanderbilt, and I don't
understand. Oh, J.J. Bleday. He's pretty good.
Like, he's good, but I don't understand.
I don't know if he's Vaughn good.
Right, I don't understand.
You know I'm biased like you are.
Yeah, you've said Vaughn's like a Votto-level talent.
Yeah, I might end up regretting that, but that's –
of course.
I'm going to call it like I see it. I think he's really good, really polished.
Yeah, and there are guys at BP who are also more knowledgeable than us that have said similar things about Vaughn. So I don't understand why the Marlins, if they're going to take a college hitter, wouldn't take Vaughn. It's not like they have any first base prospects, so whatever.
I'm going to say that the Marlins don't really have a plan.
Shocking. Point is, he's currently projected to go fifth, which is a dip for him. And Kylie and Eric at Fangraphs, both of whom are very, like, I think they do good work, have mentioned a scenario here where Vaughn could fall past the Tigers and go even further, right? And they also talk about how all of the next teams have first baseman established. The Padres do, the Reds do, the Braves do, the Giants kind of do if they're going to stick with Belt and Posey. They think the Rangers are going to go under slot, and then suddenly Vaughn could be there at 11 or 12. I don't think that's ever going to happen. I think all the teams who pass on him are making a humongous mistake if this does happen. But I want to hope.
Dare to dream, Lucas. This would be like I always say, thinking about like David Wright as a prospect, like some guys just fall in the draft for like not particularly good reasons, you know?
Right.
This would definitely qualify as that. As far as I'm concerned, he's definitely a top three talent in this draft, probably a top two, maybe the best.
I think if he played any other position other than first, he would go first overall. And we'll talk about Rushman, because that's your guy, right? And he's probably
mostly just because you took Vaughn.
I
took Rushman.
Rushman's really, really good, but I think if Vaughn played any other position, like if he was a good corner outfielder, first overall.
Yep.
I wanted to ask you who you thought the best hitter in the draft, like in the last 10 years, has there been a better hitter in the draft? Like hyped up as a top five pick. Like Bryce Harper is the name that comes to mind, but aside from
are we just doing college guys or
any guy? I was saying I don't think like people have talked about Vaughn as possibly the best college hitter ever.
Yeah, which, I'm not a super like college expert or anything, college ball expert or anything, but I've never seen somebody slug 19 in a season before in the Pac-12.
Right. And it's like it's not like he's doing this at Arizona either. Cal is not the easiest place to.
Yeah, lots of wind,
It's not super warm.
For comparison, let's look at what Bonds did in the Pac-12.
Bonds also played at Arizona, right? Which is fundamentally different.
Where did do you know where Eric Valente played? Because I know he broke Bonds' record, Pac-12 record for bombs.
Eric Valente, I couldn't tell you. Oh, yeah. UCLA.
Yeah, gotcha. Bonds never slugged 800. 713 was his highest as a junior at Arizona State.
That Vaughn is beating that in a down year by his standards.
This is pretty great.
To be clear, Vaughn is not Bonds.
No, no one will ever be Bonds.
Right, but the stats are nuts.
Wild.
I think that's enough about me professing my love for
Andrew Vaughn. I'm sure we'll talk about him again. One last thing about Vaughn.
Mm-hmm.
So you said that all of the teams, the next, if you made it to five, the next group of teams have long-term established first basemen.
Yes.
Don't the Mets kind of have?
Yeah.
I'm not disagreeing with you here. I just think it's an interesting discussion to have.
I think my personal take, and like I said, I would say all these other teams are silly for passing on Vaughn.
Of course, yeah.
In baseball, I always say you take the best player available, and I think you make it work, right? You find
And like we said, or like I said, like weird things happen to defensive profiles in the pros. Like Michael Conforto was a bad defensive.
People said Conforto was a bad defensive outfielder.
People said he was going to end up at first base, and he's probably in the top handful of
he's one of the better defensive.
Outfielders.
Yeah, absolutely. He was like a. He wasn't above average.
He might win Gold Glove someday. Like,
absolutely. He was fine in center.
Yeah, they said the same thing about Alonso, not being able to play first base, which is like, you need to be a special kind of terrible not to be able to play first base.
First base. Tell him how it's incredibly, tell him Wash. It's incredibly hard. But if it came down to it, listen, the Tigers took a chance when they had Miguel Cabrera and said, you know what? We want Prince Fielder too, so we're going to play Miguel Cabrera at third.
Mm-hmm.
I think Vaughn will hit enough. First of all, I think Vaughn would be a better defensive third baseman than Cabrera was at that point. And I also think he'll be good enough that you overcome those defensive shortcomings. And who's he going to replace at third for the Mets exactly? Checks notes. J.D. Davis.
Hey, he could probably play left.
Right. Like, you make it work.
Yeah.
And I think...
Too many good offensive players is a good problem to have.
Right. It's also, and I love Alonso. He's been great so far. I believe in him, but he also doesn't have a huge track record. Like we saw what happened to Ike Davis. Ike Davis hit 30 home runs one year and then disappeared forever.
Yep.
So. All right, that's enough for me.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no problem. Sorry, I just thought that was interesting.
No, it is, absolutely.
So I guess we'll go to my guy, who is the aforementioned Adley Rutschman, a catcher from Oregon State University. A little bit about him. He was born in Portland, Oregon, so he's kind of like a local guy, much like Andrew Vaughn. He played for Sherwood High School in Sherwood, Oregon, and was drafted in the 40th round of the 2016 draft by the Mariners, so also a local team. He didn't sign so that he could play both one of my favorite things about him is he didn't sign so that he could play both football and baseball at Oregon State, where he was a place kicker during his freshman year.
Huh.
It's like a super weird thing. Like, not only was he a two sport person, he played like the two most specialized positions in the sport. we're gonna get an email from some football person saying,
oh, that, like,
kicker is not a specialized position. Please. I know nothing about football.
I cannot wait until Tom Brady retires and I can stop caring about football.
Yep. So as a two-sport athlete, he didn't really hit particularly well. As a freshman, he hit .234, .322, .306 in 209 at-bats across 67 games. He walked 27 times against 39 Ks, which isn't terrible, but, you know, not what you want. He gave up on football following that year to focus solely on baseball and basically broke out immediately. He helped lead the Beavers to the College World Series championship last year in 2018, hitting .408, .505, .628 in 250 at-bats. With 53 walks against 40 Ks, he hit 9 homers and 34 extra base hits, so a lot of extra base power with some over-the-fence power. He was basically the MVP of the College World Series for the Beavers. And, yeah, he's basically picked up right where he left off. Hitting .424, .574, .771 in 170 at-bats so far this year, with 16 home runs, 26 extra base hits, and 66 walks against 36 Ks.
That's actually outperforming Vaughn this year.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, it's still early, and it's so ridiculous in both aspects, but... Yeah, he's pretty much having the season you would want to have if you're one of the guys in consideration for, you know, going first overall. Mm-hmm. He basically solidified his every weak point in his game. You know, over the fence power was something they said he might not develop a ton of, and that's not the case right now. Mm-hmm. So from a scouting point of view, all of this elite offensive performance in a, you know, very good conference comes with him being like a really, really good defensive catcher by all accounts. It's not really something I'm an expert on, but pretty much nobody's questioning his potential to stay behind the plate. And most evaluators that I've read seem to think that he's got the potential to be an elite defensive catcher in addition to being an elite offensive player. And if that wasn't enough, he's also a switch hitter. So,
oh boy,
he's kind of like the perfect, the perfect college position player prospect.
He sounds like what Matt Wieters was supposed to be.
Yeah. good pull.
Switch hitting Joe Mauer with power. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Are you worried at all? I know some people have talked about, like, he had he used to play quarterback, but then had a shoulder injury in high school. Does that concern you at all? So I'm generally very wary of shoulder injuries, but being worried about a high school football injury seems like a bit of a reach.
Yeah, I'm not worried. I hadn't even heard of that before now. It, by all accounts, his arm is very strong. Could it become a thing? Maybe. But also, if it becomes a thing, you could probably find someplace else to play him if the bat plays to its potential.
Right, right.
So there's plenty of, like, the floor isn't just, like, the floor is, like a decent catcher for most teams, like a, I guess, like a first division regular of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably too high, but whatever. Or, you know, good offensive player somewhere else on the diamond, so. And the upside is best catcher in baseball.
Yeah, I mean, this is insane, right?
Yeah. Checks all of my boxes.
I totally, like, from an emotional standpoint, I still would want Vaughn with a pick, but I absolutely, from a purely logical perspective, Rutschman is the pick. Like, he's far and away the best player in this. And coming into the season, there might have been an argument, but the fact that Rutschman's offense has exploded to this level is really nuts.
Yep. I think it's more or less even odds who ends up being the better big leaguer, you know, between Rutschman and Vaughn.
And we already talked about how catchers are weird.
Catchers are weird. They develop weirdly. You know, it's a position where he's going to take a pounding, whereas first base is not.
Right.
But, you know, they're clearly the two best players in this draft, I think. You know, we're both biased towards college position players, so Bobby Witt Jr., sorry. But,
he's
real good.
Is there? I wonder why he didn't. It doesn't look like he went to the Cape Cod League last year.
Might have played with like Team USA or something.
Oh,
I asked Jared about Josh Jung this week, and he said that's why he wasn't on the Cape last year.
I thought Vaughn was on Team USA as well. Maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, Rutschman played. Oh, he played in 2017.
2017, right? And that's before he
fully committed to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw him a couple times as well, and I wasn't particularly impressed that year. But this was also pre-breakout. Right? Yeah. And it was just like, all right, you're another catcher whose defense I can't assess, who can't really hit these guys with sliders.
Yeah, he was a catcher, and not only a catcher who couldn't focus on just baseball.
Right, right.
He had another sport to play. So, like, he's dividing his time between defense and hitting a third time with a whole other sport.
Mm-hmm.
But, so, yeah, he's real good.
That'd be the one concern I have, given that people often cite, like, metal bat swing, and I've never quite understood what that meant. Like,
I asked Jared about how to identify it probably twice a week.
Uh-huh.
It's something I hear a lot about. I know some of the symptoms, which are, like, if they're looking to, like, ping singles the other way, you know.
Sure.
But for the most part, the answer is just like you have to see them with wood bats and see if it translates. A lot of it's like you know it when you see it.
So it sounds like based on that description, if a guy's hitting for elite power, he probably doesn't have a metal bat swing.
Probably, but yeah, again, like it's nothing I've been able to pin down.
Yeah, we need one of
like the famous example was Kobe Woodmansey, which
yes.
Let me look up, because if I recall, he did hit for one of the things he had going for him, but again, at Arizona State, I believe.
Yeah, so he was ASU, he was their shortstop.
Also didn't hit for much power.
No.
His highest ISO was 173.
Why did I think? Okay, no, I'm
thinking. No, but that was the write-up of him at the time.
Oh, okay.
That he was, you know, a shortstop with power, and neither of those things proved to be true.
Right. So, I mean, point is, if a guy is slugging in the 700s, I think I'm comfortable saying his swing is good.
Right. I mean, and it could be like stiff or any of the other terms that basically mean you don't like the swing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But, you know, the specific metal bat problem or the Stanford swing problem is
That's something
probably entirely. Not something that, so.
And to tie this back real quick, there's 0.00% chance Rutschman makes it to the Mets.
Yeah, so. No, literally zero. Like, yep. Vaughn, there's a scenario because, you know, there is a knock on him that he's a first baseman, which, you know, obviously neither of us care about.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the – if there's going to be a bad reason for Vaughn to fall farther than he should, that's the bad reason.
Yep.
Rutschman, there's literally nothing.
Yep.
You have to go back to him being a freshman who also plays football to find any flaw in his game.
Yep, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. That being said, weird things happen once these guys get into the pros. We'll see. Mm-hmm. All right, should we move on to, oh yeah, that guy?
Yeah, we only have one this week because we've already gone for like too long.
Long enough for Brian to have a conversation with us, probably.
Oh, right. So good. Yeah, just one guy this week. It's going to be Court. We were looking at notable Mets draft busts because it fits in with our main story for this week. So the guy we picked was Corey Vaughn, who between the 10th of May in 2011 and the 20th of May hit 325, 509, 525. That's a 192 weighted runs created plus, two home runs, more walks than strikeouts. He was a 22-year-old in single A, but still, that's pretty good line. Pretty great line.
It's a good week. I don't care who you are.
Yeah, even if you are the son of a four-time All-Star.
Yep.
He's Greg Vaughn's son.
Gotta draft those bloodlines.
Yeah, absolutely. Get me the latest Wilpon on the phone right now. Draft him right away. He was drafted in the fourth round of the 2010 draft out of San Diego State. Never really... That really great week aside, never really got going in the minors. He hung around in the org till 2015. He made it to AAA, and then eventually left for the Canadian American League.
The Can-Am League.
Yeah. So the South Maryland Blue Crabs. So he's still kicking around.
The Atlantic League. He spent a year in the Can-Am League.
Okay. I can't read.
It's still there, which is interesting.
Anyway, some guys just love the game that much, so.
Yeah. And who knows? He might find his way back to organized ball at some point.
You never know.
Yep. Baseball's weird.
Don't think we need to draw out a discussion of Corey Vaughn any more than that.
That was a riveting edition of Oh Yeah, That Guy. So any closing remarks, I guess, Lucas?
No. Looking forward to a long discussion about him and his swing next week, and then anxiously watching the draft board to see the Mets take a college pitcher with polish.
I swear to God, if they take Zach Thompson.
Oh, they're going to take Zach Thompson.
I'm trying not to be mean about it, because like Zach Thompson could be a very good big league pitcher, but you know, we've talked a lot about Anthony Kay and the process that went into drafting Anthony Kay when you knew he was going to need Tommy John. And a lot of – not that Thompson is going to need Tommy John, but there's already question marks. I don't know.
Those same warning signs, the same overuse, just Control-C, Control-V.
Yep. Time is a flat circle.
Maybe in 4 years we'll be yelling at the Mets for not promoting Thompson to AAA fast enough. Who knows? Great.
All right. So I'm Ken Lavin. You can find me on Twitter at KenLavin91. I'm here with Lucas Vlahos. Lucas, that's the right Twitter handle, right?
Yeah.
LVlahos343.
Yep, that's it.
Okay. We will be joined next week with our fearless leader, Steve Sippa. He's at Steve Sippa on Twitter. You can email the show at fromcomplextoqueens@gmail.com. I think that is the correct email.
Yes, I believe it is.
I hope it is. And please rate and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts from. That would really help us out. And have a good week, Mets fans. Hopefully things go well.
They won't.
Oh, God.